Welcome to the Hearts of Oak podcast. Hearts of Oak is a populist free speech alliance that seeks to push back the cultural Marxism that pervades all areas of our society. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and an open and free discussion on any topic are the bedrocks to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. We hope you enjoy this episode.
And good evening, Hearts of Oak. Thank you so much for joining us once again for another interview. It's a pre-record, comes to you a few days before, and it is my honour to have Dr. Robert Malone join me. Robert, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Peter, for the opportunity to speak with you and share some time with you and with your audience. We're all on this journey together, trying to make sense out of this crazy situation. I don't have all the answers. I'm sure you don't have all the answers. I'm sure your audience doesn't, but maybe if we put all our heads together, we can figure a few things out.
No, absolutely. I'll put up some of the details where people can find you. Your website, rwmalonemd.com. You can go to that and read the whole background story of mRNA and your involvement in that. And you're down as the vaccine inventor. So all the details are there on the website, and also your Twitter handle at rwmalonemd. And I've had great fun going through your Twitter for the last few months, probably since the Dark Horse podcast interview, but we'll touch on that in a little bit. But Robert, there's no way that I could do justice in introducing you. So could I defer to you and ask you just to take a few moments and introduce yourself to our viewers before we go into depth into the topic?
Well, thank you. And thanks for that lead in. It does get tiresome to have to constantly say, what did you do? How are you really the inventor? Blah, 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 you know, and rehash old wounds from when I was a 28-year-old. I'm a little older now, in case you notice, and I've experienced many things, and you know, I'm not the person I was back then. The truth is that I was, I thought a lot about myself back in the days, and I was very ambitious. Also very, very hardworking. And really wanted to, light the world on fire. There's been a few miles on, under the tires since then, and they've had to be replaced once or twice. So, I'm not quite that what I was, but the documents are there. And, it's a fascinating story that my wife pulled together, and just, if I can just finish off that thread just a bit. It's kind of important to understand that, I had a nervous breakdown at the end of my graduate student career. And, I took a master's in lieu of a PhD, having, passed my PhD exams. But I got caught in the crossfire of a lot of big, important people all jockeying for money and power and fights over patent rights between the University of California, San Diego and Salk Institute, and things that a 28-year-old shouldn't be subjected to. And I ended up with a diagnosis from a university physician of post-traumatic stress disorder. And I still have the effects, is the honest truth. And I really don't like to go over those things again and again and again. I guess in some ways it's therapeutic. But it's not fun for me. So please, you can read the documents yourself. I got contacted by a Swiss journalist a few months ago who said, hey, I could talk to you because you were the guy that did the first work. And I said, well, that's nice. Thank you for calling. You know, no one else has seen fit to call, and various other people were busy claiming credit for what was really the egg out of my own brain. Mm-hmm. That they, you know, landed on about a decade after I did, but it's all water under the bridge. So who am I? That's a complex question. I am a licensed physician. Licensed practice as physician and surgeon in the state of Maryland. I maintain my license. Just got it renewed about a month ago. Please don't call me for a physician's exemption or any medical advice. I do not treat patients. I don't have an active practice. I'm sorry. Please don't call me. My phone and my Gmail are just blown out. The probability is I'm not going to get back to you, not because I don't care, but because my life is not my own anymore. So licensed physician in the state of Maryland and, deeply, deeply a scientist. It's in my bones. I've had fundamentals of hardcore scientific research, ethics and practice drilled into me, over, you know, literally decades of education and then practice as a free living, scientist in the school of hard knocks, operating off of soft money and grants and contracts. I've won or managed, well over $1 billion, it may be a couple of $1 billion in grants and contracts now, with the U.S. government, DOD, NIH and others. I sit on federal study sections, often. So this is the people that award grants and contracts or evaluate their legitimacy, often for DOD or for NIH, or National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, Tony Fauci's shop. Oftentimes I am asked to be the chairperson of those. I've got a long history of working closely with the government, for better, for worse, including the intelligence community and Defense Threat Reduction Agency. I am a bona fide expert in biodefense and biodefense product development. I've been doing vaccine development since I was knee-high to a grasshopper, starting in 1982, basically involved in this world. Was in a laboratory that had some of the key initial discoveries relating to what we now call AIDS. In non-human primate models. I had a very productive academic career. The fundamental platform technology of mRNA and DNA vaccines came off of my bench and out of my brain, back in the late 80s and early 90s. And then subsequently for about a decade after that, I've got many, many patents, not just the ones relating to mRNA and DNA vaccines. My wife and I have a issued broad fundamental patent on mucosal polynucleotide vaccines. So that's intranasal or other things that covers the adenoviral vectors and mRNA and DNA. I've got marketed products. I was central to spearheading the early development, of the Ebola vaccine that we now call the Merck Ebola vaccine. I'm the one that brought Merck into that deal. When I was working closely with DOD and on behalf of my client, NewLink Genetics, I was at the tip of the spear in repurposing drugs for Zika. You can find those links. So I've been through, you know, H1N1. I worked at Solvay Pharmaceuticals as medical director for influenza vaccines under a $300 million BARDA contract for cell-based influenza vaccine development. I know this world. Okay. I'm trained in regulatory affairs, project management, formally trained by a Beltway bandit in business development called TASC. This is a reference, Beltway being the DC environment. I've spent time interacting with senators and House members and lobbyists on the Hill. I've mentored senior government officials, including the gentleman that, actually was the project manager for the Moderna vaccine. I know this space. Now, okay, that's part of my life. I'm also been married, you know, virtually I married my high school sweetheart. We're still married. We've rebuilt 5 different small farms. We currently live and operate a small farm in, Virginia. It's about 50 acres, including the leased land. Wow. We produce a very, very high quality horse called a Lusitano. Some people think we may have the best Lusitano mare string in North America. You know, dropped 7 foals this year. They all sell in the, as weanlings in the $10,000 to $20,000 range. Our senior stallion is currently competing at level 4 in dressage and soon will be at Prix St. George. I'm a pretty good rider, but I'm only level 3, so I don't ride him anymore. He's off at a high-end trainer. Mm. And I've been I was a carpenter and a farmhand before I was a physician and a scientist. I kind of bootstrapped. I've been poor. There's a time when I actually did live off of roadkill. I understand hardship. Mm. God knows. It's not an effort. I think most people think I don't talk bound to them, whether they're a farmhand or a fancy professor. But I'm also not intimidated by Tony Fauci. I've crossed swords with him many other times. And, I know what makes him tick. And I've seen him, you know, watched him for 30 years. He's able to get away with stuff that I would be, I would basically get blacklisted for and lose my ability to practice my art as a clinical development specialist. But, you know, it is what it is. A lot of us, just shrug our shoulders about Tony. Mm. He's allowed to do stuff that, it has been. It's not like the Tigers changing stripes here. Mm. The stuff that is becoming apparent to the world now, has been how he's operated for decades.
Yeah.
It's just the way things are in my world. If I can finish on one thread, on this, seems like forever ago, I was contacted by this interesting character, Steve Kirsch. You mentioned the Dark Horse podcast. He's the balding guy who talks over me all the time. Steve deserves a lot of credit. He's wealthy in the range of hundreds of millions, but not wealthy in the billionaire club like Mr. Gates and others. Okay.
Yeah.
So he's not super wealthy. They don't like have a special room for him at Davos. The gentleman has been, involved in philanthropic actions involving healthcare for a long time. He personally funded clinical trials at Wash U for fluvoxamine when no one else would do it. And he came to me a number of months ago because he was told I was somebody that understands BARDA, the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Agency of Health and Human Services. And I do understand BARDA, and I'm somebody who can kind of make the government work when it is not able to work otherwise, because I know who to call and talk to. So Steve was told to come to me because he was frustrated because he couldn't get emergency use authorization for fluvoxamine. And I helped him through that and helped him to interact with BARDA. And it was fascinating doing so because he was naive. He hadn't grown up with a system like I have.
Mm.
And the metaphor of the boiling frog, if you know that metaphor, right? Really comes to mind. In dealing with Steve, I had to confront, and by the way, some folks at BARDA also, in talking to him, had to come to terms with how all of this crazy looks from the outside. Because Steve is an outsider. And he was coming into this whole situation going, but that doesn't make sense. But that doesn't make sense. How come? I don't get it. You know, aren't they just concerned with fill in the blank, you know, safety and efficacy? And why don't they want to make this available? And for me, it was a fascinating journey, helping Steve through his own personal discovery of what we've come to here in the States, and really worldwide in terms of how we do public health. And I got to say, looking at it, if you can think of you, Peter, or your audience, Steve being a surrogate, and you're looking at this saying, what the heck is going on? This doesn't make any sense at all. Can tell you that you are on the track of Steve Kirsch, having that same voyage of discovery and, seeing through your eyes, empathizing with you and the Twitter audience and Steve. You're right. It doesn't make sense. This is a horrible way to run the show, and something's got to be fixed. How we get there, I don't know. But if you're feeling that this is all, some serious bad juju going on here, I'm pretty sure you're right. So there's who I am. Okay.
The interview you refer to, we'll have it in the description. So however people are watching, or if they're listening to the podcasts, that interview with yourself, with Steve, with Brett Weinstein on his Dark Horse podcast, fantastic and worth a watch for anyone if you have not watched it. That'll all be in the description. I encourage you to go and have a look at that. A couple of areas I wanted to ask you. First of all, maybe politically. Over the last 18 months, and I'm political background, a political junkie, we've seen politicians probably like never before give instructions and curtail some freedoms. And with a handful of exceptions, our freedoms have been restricted across the world. And I'm wondering, advice has quickly turned into more strong-armed tactics. We've seen in some countries that has happened. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on kind of the universal restrictions that have come in, irrespective of the types of government, that we've seen these generally country by country. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts have been as that has moved across, before we get down into the medical stuff.
So to illustrate the point, 20 minutes ago, I finished a podcast with a gentleman from Australia. So that is increasingly, unfortunately, becoming the global case study in exactly what you're describing. And I've also been contacted by a politician in Australia that will remain nameless, that observes the political opportunity inherent in this situation. So I'm pretty sure that there's going to be some backlash internationally in different nation states. And if we needed an example of that, even though I increasingly call them the legacy media, has done their best to filter news feeds coming out of Great Britain and France in particular. There's a lot of folks there that are pretty worked up over exactly the issue that you mentioned there, Peter. And I can't see how this isn't going to lead to some political upsets, not the least of which is going to be the House in the United States. So what do I think about this authoritarianism? I think it's absolutely wrong. It's unethical. I think there's a Cockney saying, from the UK, you know, what is it? It ain't right. It ain't proper, and it ain't fair. Think that about captures it. You know, I think that's a thing that most of us can feel in our bones. I find it fascinating as somebody who grew up in the central coast of California. Okay. So from a conservative standpoint, I grew up in the belly of the beast. If you're along those lines, now the truth is my folks were card carrying, Nixon, campaign volunteers, and they were weaned on Barry Goldwater. So, you know, I'm not I guess I and my family has deep, deep Southern roots. Mm-hmm. My great, great, great grandfather campaigned, as a captain in the Alabama Second through this valley where I live and, fought in the Battle of Richmond and got himself all shot up, and went back to Alabama because he couldn't, he was too broken. So those are my roots, but, fundamentally, I've always considered myself a progressive. Hmm. However, I'm going to just bridge to an anecdote. I like to tell stories, forgive me. So I was the only people that wanted to talk to me. And after that Brett Weinstein podcast was conservative media.
Wow.
And my liberal progressive friends won't talk to me anymore. Because I have committed the unpardonable sin of talking to Tucker Carlson, in which, by the way, I, as you may or may not recall, but when I went on Tucker, he wanted me to go down various rabbit holes, and instead, and I got the Tucker kind of response is when I said the database at the CDC was all screwed up and we couldn't really. Track the adverse events. And that was considered heretical, that I would disclose this on national media. And I find it fascinating that there's actually a clause embedded in the BioNTech license authorization that explicitly states that the databases, including VAERS, are insufficient in the United States for tracking rare adverse events, and that directs BioNTech to set up studies to do what the CDC and the FDA are incapable of doing, which is, by the way, their charter. It's what we pay them for. But they just can't seem to get it together. And, so that's, you know, that's happened. And then if I can finish on this thread, I'm told that it is never happened before that Mr. Glenn Beck had the same guest on three times in a row. Wow. And yet I have had that privilege. I'm not bragging. It just happened. I didn't ask for it. Glenn and I got together, got along pretty good. You know, Glenn raises cattle out west. And, so we just kind of hit it off. I live in a purple state in a red county and I run a horse farm. I got to deal with folks from all walks of life. I got to go down to the feed store and get my feed and get my alfalfa and whatnot. And I don't get to pick and choose who I talk to. And I pride myself on being able to talk with everybody and kind of try to understand where they're coming from. So I go on Glenn Beck for three times. And at the very end of it, and he tries to take me down various rabbit holes. I do not want to talk about critical race theory. Please don't ask me about critical race theory. It's like putting a gun to my head and shooting myself. Okay. Let's just not go there. So in the end, he says to me at the, you know, third day, very end of the podcast, he says, you know what? I've really enjoyed talking to you, Robert. And the thing I've enjoyed most is you haven't brought politics in any of this.
Hmm.
And then he went on, and had the former mayor of New York, launch into one of his, rants. So, you know, it was a moment in time, it really caused me to think, that what's happening here transcends left and right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I get letters and emails all the bloody time. I can't even read them. Jill reads a lot of them. I get personal letters from folks that are seriously concerned about what's going on here. The other day I got a handwritten letter together with a book, titled "And They Thought They Were Free." That was a detailed, you know, series of interviews and analyses of Germany in the 1930s and, what went on there and the incrementalism that led to people eventually tolerating unthinkable acts.
Mm.
And, I don't, you know, there's, was it God, God, there's some, you know, we're not supposed to ever talk about that, in the media or in, you know, in political discussions. Yet my European colleagues talk about it all the time.
Yeah.
Is the parallelism in the language being used. Mm. And the, you know, if we needed a example of where this is going and, you know, it couldn't happen here, the Toronto Star headlines basically saying we should abandon the unvaxxed and put them out in tents and not really take care of them, let them die. I'm paraphrasing, but anybody here can pull up that Toronto Star headline. It went viral globally. Whoa, guys, let's take a moment, take a deep breath. We're losing our humanity here. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we're seeing is a political realignment. And if you want a case study, Bobby Kennedy, RFK Jr., who is absolutely convinced, by the way, that the CIA killed his dad and his uncle. Mm. And you know, there's a case to be made there. He's sure of it. And he also is probably vaccine injured. I don't know if you've ever spoken to him. But he's got a laryngospasm problem that makes it very hard for him to talk. And it's a common adverse event associated with adult influenza vaccination.
Oh.
And it's relatively new onset. So, you know, people disparage Bobby Kennedy as an anti-vaxxer. I got to say, I talk to him from time to time. And that's not what I hear. I hear somebody who's become a little radicalized by what he's learned and experienced as he's had his own journey, like many of us, are now experiencing. You know, there's some badness going on here. It's not that vaccine technology is bad, but there's regulatory capture and a lot of other stuff that's going on that is just not right. And it's not leading us to having, safe and effective and unadulterated products, in alignment with the FDA's charter, in my opinion.
Mm.
And Bobby is being embraced by, the right. He's feeling like he's been abandoned by the Democrats. And I think a lot of people are feeling that.
Yeah.
A lot of people on the left that I'm hearing more and more from are saying, right. And so leave you on this thread. In my opinion, a lot of people want to say this is good versus evil. I prefer not to think about that. I think people are more complex than that dimension, but I do think personally that this realignment is along the lines of, people that are more invested in collectivism. And people that are more invested in personal liberty. Mm. And I think that's where my messaging and the consensus in, more conservative media and much of your audience lines up is I am way deep in, I'm not a florid libertarian. But I am really, really staunch entrenched in the idea that you have personal rights and, those, should not be violated. Sorry, I think I'm going to turn off my cell phone here because I'm getting pestered. And this whole issue and these authoritarian actions, they're counterproductive. There's a study on my Twitter feed that comes from, it's kind of a major think tank RAND piece, looked at the effects of the lockdowns on 40 different countries and compared the impact economically and on lives, and clearly documents a significant adverse consequence of lockdown strategy, both economically and on lives. It's not saving lives, it's costing lives. As my friend in Australia that I was just on with, pointed out, they've had about three times the numbers of suicides that they've had deaths from COVID in New South Wales. So these strategies. I think you're right that what we're seeing is folks that feel entitled and privileged and really fairly arrogant, feel that their authority is challenged and people should, they seem to feel that people should just take their words at face value and just, you know, salute and line up and bend over and, metaphorically speaking, a lot of us are saying, hell no. Mm-hmm. We don't trust you. We don't believe in you. And we're seeing you, outright lie and flip flop again and again and again. And we've lost confidence in you. And, that confidence is not being rebuilt by the director of the CDC, by the current president saying, we're all going to get another jab. And the director of the CDC, when pressed, and asked whether they have data to support the third jab, she says, no, we don't have data. We have hope. You know, as I said to another broadcast journalist, what is the Biden administration now a faith-based administration? You know, hope is not science. Okay. Yeah. And when we're talking about implementing authoritarian practices, like, by the way, you're going to lose your job unless you take the jab. And yet the vaccine is leaky as a sieve. It's not protecting you very well from infection. Your viral titers are at least as high as somebody with Delta, as somebody who didn't take the jab. It's not preventing you from infecting other people if you do get it. As a matter of fact, it reduces your symptoms, so you're more likely to be walking around shedding virus. And we're going to mandate that everybody gets this thing that's only good for about 6 months, and then you got to get another jab. But we don't actually know if the other jab is a good idea or a bad idea. And by the way, here's a secret, guys. It's called high zone tolerance. Okay. With vaccines and vaccinology and immunology, more is not better. It's not like a regular drug. Okay. Inside scoop. That's why we need this thing called data and science to make sure that we don't put a bunch of people's lives at risk unnecessarily because we have hope. Okay. Mm. If you want clear indication that they are winging it right now, that's it. That is a smoking gun. I firmly object to that as a professional and as a physician. That is just not okay.
A story that's just come out, and it was on your Twitter feed, I think today, which fits into that in the data, is the whole issue of Israel and Sweden. Now have said that those from Israel cannot travel to Sweden. I think Portugal did it a few days ago. And yet we were told that Israel, I think it's about 60%, I think have had one jab or maybe two jabs, but it was at the forefront of ruling out the vaccines, strongly encouraging it. And yet, so we have a country that's high vaccine, and can you make sense of that? What's happening?
Yeah. My wife, Jill, Dr. Jill Glasspool Malone, ran this to ground. And what she sees in the literature in trying to dive into this and looking at information from Sweden. By the way, I had another hour long with a podcaster from Sweden just a little earlier this too. The party line, I don't know what was in their mind. I can't get into the mind of the Swedish regulators. I'm not psychic. I've had podcasters on who assure me that they're psychic, but I can guarantee I'm not psychic. What is being said in the press there is that, and I think this gets to a fundamental truth. their policy is that there's clearly a major outbreak happening in Israel, and that their Israel is not monomorphic. Yet most of the population is almost obsessively compliant with government mandates.
Yeah.
Because for them, the wolf is at the door, right? They've been subjected, many of them, their whole lives to warfare, for better or for worse. You know, whether it's justified or not, and their policies regarding the Palestinians, who, by the way, are grossly under-vaccinated. So that's that. But there are islands in Israel in the population of fundamentalists that refuse to take the jab.
Yeah.
Just as there are in New York City. And those populations are skewed older than the general population in Israel. So that makes them at higher risk. And what I'm hearing is that the virus is just ripping through those people, unfortunately. And there's a lot of this death and disease is not reported. This is another one where the press is failing us. Oh, what a surprise. By not actually doing investigative journalism that took my wife about 45 minutes to do. I don't know what to say about journalism now. They're just darn lazy. I don't know what they do. They get up and go have tea with each other or something, but they don't seem to be doing their job, which is a whole nother thread. Why do I have to do their job for them? I'm not trained to do this, but I'm having to do it because they're not doing it So it takes Jill about 45 minutes to figure out that there's this problem in Israeli data and, that what we think is a monomorphic population that is universally accepted vaccine. To extremely high level is actually ain't so. But the Israeli government doesn't, segregate out, special populations, nor does ours. We talk about ethnic groups, whatever that means. Because we're such a melting pot, it's absurd. It's more like, you know, behavior groups or something is a better way to think about it. In Israel, they have these subpopulations and apparently the virus is just having its way with them. And that is biasing the data out of Israel in ways that we're not able to disambiguate. But apparently the Swedish have looked at this and said, I think not. These folks from this region are just represent in aggregate too much of a risk of bringing in. The other thing is that right now Israel seems to be one of the hot breeding grounds of new viral variants that are able to escape vaccination. So if you're Sweden, why do you want those folks coming here when the Swedes are down to pretty close, you know, depending on the day. They're usually at zero deaths.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And so what's the upside? You know, just like we implemented, and by the way, that's another part of the story that's not covered here in the States, is the EU came up with this policy that said individual member states have the latitude to block. So they didn't come out with a policy saying, no. We're going to shut the doors to everybody and Dr. Malone can't come to Rome. Sorry. They said individuals, EU member states now have the latitude to implement, travel restrictions or not as they see fit. And, skeptics might say that that was partially provoked by the fact that the United States has not dropped the travel ban to Europeans coming to the States. Despite the fact that that's something that, I'm sorry, I'm going to get political, that Mr. Biden and his colleagues said they were going to do. Okay. So that was, you know, remember, our favorite whipping boy, you got the hat in the background there.
I do.
Mr. Trump, and anything that Mr. Trump did was, obviously, rank amateurism and craziness. And Mr. Trump put this, travel restriction in place. Personally, I'm sure he woke up one morning and he said, travel restriction today. I don't think that's how that happens in DC. I think that we got a whole bunch of bureaucrats that manage a lot of this decision making process. And I think that it's the same crew yesterday as it was today with the same background thinking. And for some reason, those folks have found it that, appropriate that they not revisit the decision to ban travel from Europe, even though the attack rate here in the States is way higher than it is in most European states. So I don't know. You know, how do we unscramble this egg? It's just a mess.
There, it seems a worldwide. I mean, I've personally, I've held off in no rush to get a vaccine. Got all my other vaccines up to now, but decided that actually I'm healthy. There's no need to rush it. And there are many other people. It seems as though worldwide, it's in the West, there's a difference between rich countries and poor countries, but certainly in the developed countries, we're all told it's slowing down, hitting maybe 75%, and is slowing down. But everything governments have done so far has probably made those who haven't got it more cynical. And I'm wondering what, if you were advising governments in this way, how would you get past that? Because telling people they won't have a job if they don't get vaccinated isn't going to encourage people. It just will make them bunker down even more. So, yeah, how do you kind of bridge that gap?
So that's a great question. That feeds into this. I've posted it a few times on LinkedIn and Twitter in various versions. What happens on the other side when we've destroyed public trust in the public health enterprise? Mm. How do we recover from that? That's kind of the question you're asking.
Yeah.
How do we restore public trust after it's been so deeply damaged by all the lies? I'm speaking plainly.
Hmm.
I don't have the answer to that. So Peter Navarro likes to do, he did this in one of the Bannon things. Dr. Malone, what would you advise Mr. Biden to do? I don't know, Peter, have a nap. I don't know. So, I thought you'd like that. We had it with Ronnie and we're having it with Joe, in Ronnie's last term. So that's, we've been there before, right? And the apparatus takes control. We're referring to, mental agility, the elderly, to be gentle. What would be my advice be? So as you've seen in the Washington Times, Peter and I have put out two op-eds, now, talking about what we think, an alternative policy might be. I don't think that it's possible for either the United States or China to come clean on the origin of the virus.
Hmm.
That would be a good start. But I don't think they can do it because I think there's a reasonable chance that we've got complicity on both sides.
Yeah.
And if it is a laboratory origin, material, and I think that's a reasonable probability. And, if they were to come clean, the financial and political liability would be overwhelming.
Mm.
So just in the world of real politic, which I think we all kind of have to live in a little bit, whether, you know, it's nice to think about, there's no lies and there's no noble lies and, we're all straight arrows. There are political realities here and there are economic interests. And I'm sorry to say, but, I wish it wasn't so, you know, but we all watch Game of Thrones. Mm. you know, at least we're not there. It could be worse. So, it would be nice if people came clean, practically, as Tony Fauci, used the analogy, you know, he's a staunch Catholic, right? So the metaphor is if Jesus Christ comes to him in a dream and says, Tony, it's time to come clean. And he wakes up in the morning and he has this epiphany and he says, I'm going to come clean, about all stuff that's happened. What would happen if he did that? Is that even possible? I don't think it is. I personally believe there needs to be, some turnover. Now, Janet is going. She's been a major problem. You had Marion Gruber and some others from CBER resign, apparently in protest, at least this is the party line, of the CDC overstepping its bounds on the issue of, the third jab, and basically overstepping its bounds in getting the White House to exert pressure on the FDA. One of the things that we need to all kind of get in our brains is that back in the day, you know, like 2 years ago, we thought that the FDA was politically independent. Hmm. I can, you know, take another 10 minutes and give you a story showing explicitly that the FDA is decisions are subject to political pressure from the White House. Full stop. No questions. Okay. So the idea that we have an independent agency in the FDA that's just focused on truth and integrity and, in safety and efficacy of drugs and vaccines, for humans and a separate branch for animals. That's just false. If those days ever existed, they don't anymore. And likewise, the CDC has been politicized now for decades because, congressional, decisions about mandating what it can and can't do and can't research and backing that up through the budget. So it shouldn't be any surprise whether you're left or right. We've earned this. You know, this just didn't happen yesterday. This has been developing for decades. And the tolerance, you know, was it intentional? It's certainly been, exploited that, there was this decision that, oh, it's too expensive to fund the FDA directly. We all got to save money. We can't afford it. It's so expensive. And so we're going to charge pharmaceutical companies fees, and it's going to become basically a fee for service organization. Okay. It's like a business, the FDA, that like 60 or 70% of their budget comes from pharma. Okay. That's where we've got to. Didn't used to be that way. Okay. We justified it or they justified it or I don't know, the lobbyists or whatever. Another thing, I'm sorry to tear the veil of illusion on your listeners, but the pharmaceutical company owns the Hill, lock, stock, and barrel. They are bought and paid for. Okay, senators and congressmen, so get over it, Snowflake. They own your leadership. So don't be surprised when they're first in line. Okay, you get what you pay for. Yeah. And we've all gotten dug in that we don't want taxes and we don't want to fund the federal government, but we don't want all these goodies for free. Well, I'm sorry, this is another thing. Sorry to break it to you, the free lunch never happened. It's always a price to pay. And they brought in Big Pharma and said, okay, we're going to charge you guys big fees, but they expect to get something for their money. And what we have now is a situation where they do get something for their money. And, you know, we're paying 30 cents on the dollar and they're 70 cents on the dollar. And so, you know, who gets the better service? That's all I can say. is it sure looks like how things have gotten to from where I sit. Now, I don't know about you. So we're in a situation where the organizations that were supposed to protect us, have been co-opted. Mm-hmm. That being our representatives, Congress, Senate, FDA, CDC, and they've been bought and paid for by the likes of Pfizer. What I find amazing is, and then Pfizer, there's all of this interconnectedness now at the board of director levels. Mm. You know, Facebook has investors and investments in vaccines. Gates Foundation has investments in vaccines as a stock, not just we're going to give you money because we want you to do good. No, they're directly invested in vaccine companies, including Moderna and Pfizer. And, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, you know, we all see that on NPR and we think, oh, they must be really nice guys. Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is one of the largest shareholders of stock in Johnson & Johnson. That's where the Johnson part comes from. Hmm. And it goes on and on. So, you know, these entities, no surprise, are busy protecting their financial self-interest. What would you expect them to do otherwise? You know, you're all a bunch of free market folks. That's just the way the system works under this kind of capitalism where we have, no regulations and, we're going to let the private sector have their will with us. Well, don't be surprised. They're having their will with you. So I don't have a whole lot of sympathy, but nevertheless, it's not ethical. It's not right. It's not fair. It's not proper. We all know that. Mm. But, that's where we're at. And that's what I see. And I see a level of regulatory capture, that is of a scope that I've never seen before. And I see the ability of governments to employ propaganda and control the narrative through censorship and fact checkers and all this stuff, the whole ecosystem that's been set up to control information. So the folks taking the blue pills are just kind of not aware. They're just gobbling those blue pills. Matrix metaphor for those that aren't familiar with it. And there's a small subset that have kind of decided that something's going on here and they may not understand it, but it's not right. And then they start digging and reading and seeing for themselves. And like Neo in the Matrix, they go down the rabbit hole and they say, oh, this is not right at all. And the more they learn, the more not right it gets. And that's kind of, you know, welcome to my world and welcome to the journey of Steve Kirsch that we discussed at the start. What do we do about it? I'm at a loss. You know, it kind of feels like, it's got to be replaced. There's a thinking. So those of us in this industry, we talk about this from time to time. You know, what do we do? Sorry, a fly is bothering me. I live in a horse farm. So, unlike the vice president, I do scratch my head when the fly lands. You recall the debates, I'm sure.
Yep, I recall with Pence, yep.
So that darn fly is pestering me right now. So forgive me for that. But so you know, the question comes up, well, what would happen if Tony would resign? One of the things is that Tony has outlived his lieutenants.
Mm.
Most of them that would be that. So I was trained early on in leadership that the first thing that a leader needs to do when they assume control of an organization or a group or whatever is they should start training their replacement. This is just good practice, good business practice, right? Because your listeners are coming from a business perspective, right? This is whether they're small businessmen or whatever, right? This is good business practice. You train your successor. Whether it's your son or daughter or whatever, you know, if you're running a farm, you get them trained up because it's going to come a point where you get old and decrepit like me and somebody's got to take the helm. So Tony doesn't do that. And the people that were the logical successors have pretty much all retired. I've watched them. And he's now an octogenarian, right? Tony's 80, like some other leaders in our government. And he is the highest paid government official, full stop, more money than the president. And he's lived for decades where the rule at the NIH and the NIAID is that only Tony gets to talk. So there's nobody left. There's nobody to take his place. If he retires, the place is a train wreck. They don't know who's going to be in charge. There's no obvious successor. Likewise with, so then what do you do about that? Well, there is in people who think about these things, about bureaucracies and change, when you have an entrenched, kind of aged bureaucracy, because they all get long in the tooth and they all get kludgy and build up their own inefficiencies over time. They just do. That's wouldn't matter. You know, the English bureaucracy, it doesn't matter. It's history stuff. You know, go back to Rome. So they eventually age out and stop losing their efficiency. And the only thing you can do is build a parallel organization until you get it up to the point where it can replace the primary organization. So who's going to build a replacement for the World Health Organization and the NIH to provide and the CDC, which have just gotten too long in the tooth? They can't respond efficiently. And the Rockefeller Foundation wants Rick Bright to build one. The Gates Foundation and Nikki Lurie thought they were building one together with the Norwegians with CEPI. That's kind of turned out to be more of the same. Personally, I know Rick really, really well, have for a long time. He would not be my choice. There are those who are making a strong case that he was involved in intentionally killing hydroxychloroquine as a agent for early treatment. So Rick is all in on vaccines, just like Bill Gates is. So I don't know how what it looks on the other side. I don't know. And I don't know how we get there. I know there's going to be a new WHO director, but the names change and the some of the corruption changes, but it goes from this to that. And what I do know is when we step back, you know, talk about blowback, this term that's often used by the intelligence community, these unintended consequences. So under the former POTUS, whose red hat you've got in the background there, they decided they were frustrated with the WHO for good reason. And they said, okay, guys, we're just going to pull the plug on you. And, you know, stuff it. Go pound sand. So who stepped in? Bill Gates and the People's Republic of China. Okay. Yeah. Was that a good outcome? I don't think so. So you got to think these things through before you pull the plug. And I don't know how we get what we do if this plays out like I fear it's going to play out. There, I've said more than you wanted me to say.
No, that it's fascinating. And I'm looking at the time and I think we will bring it to a close, Dr. Roberts. It's been wonderful speaking with you. And I know that individuals like yourself have back-to-back interviews. So we do appreciate your time and helping understand this and certainly in the political side and the medical side. So thank you so much for your time today.
It's been my pleasure. And I hope it's been helpful. And if I can just leave you and your listenership with one closing thought, it's think for yourself. Don't take what I say as the gospel truth. I'm just one person. I don't get everything right, just like I said at the outset. But if I can help you to think for yourself, whether it's through the Twitter feed or this podcast or my other podcasts, it's a win for me. That's all I ask is, think for yourself, get your own information and exercise your self-will, and we'll all be better off. That's how this country, that is the foundation that this country was built on. Mr. Madison, Mr. Jefferson, and all of that crowd, Mr. Franklin. That's where they came from. Read, I live surrounded by this history, but read for yourself. Those guys took a lot of risk. And, so let's all grow up a little bit and be like them. And, that doesn't mean we have to go get, muskets and start a shooting war, but I think the starting point is thinking for ourselves and making our own decisions and standing up for our, what we believe to be fundamental inalienable rights that we all share. Thanks for listening.
No, thank you for that. Perfect ending to think for yourself. And that goes on any of the issues we cover. If I could just finish off with our viewers, Dr. Robert, the podcast talked about Dark Horse Horse podcast. That's available in the description. Click on it. And certainly the story on Washington Times a few days ago, written by Robert and Peter Navarro. Sorry, Facebook. Forced universal vaccines are not the answer. All the science should be considered, not censored. There's a link also in that the description. I'd encourage you to have a look at that. So however you've been watching or listening, thank you for joining us. Please do like, share. All the interviews are available on the website, heartsofoak.org/livestream. And when you're there, you can click that connect tab. So thank you for joining. And once again, Robert, thank you so much for your time today. It's been fascinating, and keep doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And good luck to all of us.
Thank you. And goodbye to our viewers.
Thank you for listening. Censorship is real. To sign up for our weekly email and find links to all of our platforms, go to heartsofoak.org. Please like, subscribe and share, and in the words of Churchill, keep buggering on.